This is part one of a two-part podcast.
Hey, this is T. Blankenship. Have you seen the new video of Wheatland Labs? It is permaculture awesomeness with all new and improved things like more rocket mass heaters, easy bake coffin, Willy Wonka, rocket cooktop 2.0, and the truly passive greenhouse. To see more, go to permies.com/tour. Again, that is permies.com/tour.
Turning it on. It's on. It's going.
It's on. It's going.
Yeah. It's
hello.
So, Dr. Julia, sorry, I outed you as far as being a physician,
oh,
Julia.
Oh, my God. Yeah. That's true.
Yeah, so, but I'm going to.
I'm here. I'm here for one glorious day.
We've had a few doctors come through, a few physicians come through just in the last few months.
Because they're smart.
Oh, yeah. That's what it is. It's the smart.
We
okay.
Come out here because it's cool.
But we were just talking about, like, why do people come out here?
Mm-hmm.
And I think, you know what? There was a thing I read years ago at a community that's west of here.
Okay.
And they posted this article, which I thought was just terrific. And they said, coming to our community causes divorce.
Indeed.
And it's like, what happens is that this couple will come. And they both have all these values, like we're all about permaculture and we're all about gardening and we're all about natural building and alternative energy and all this stuff. And this is what we're all about. We're all about this and we are hardworking folk and we're going to, you know, build a better world. Here we're into it. This is who we are. So they move there.
Mm-hmm. And then?
At the end of the first day, one of the couples was like, 16 hours a day isn't enough. And the other one kind of got to about 5 hours and was like looking for cheap excuses to go hide. And as the days progress, it gets more accentuated. One person is like into it and grooving on it and doing all the things. Today I did some canning and I did some fermentations and I pulled things out of the garden and I did some chop and drop and then we went and we built this thing and we, you know, on and on and on and on. And the other person's kind of like, I just want to go home and I want to go back to my old job and I want to eat at restaurants again. I learned I don't like cooking. I don't like gardening. It's so dirty. I don't like... And it's like, I thought I would, but I learned that no thanks. So this is what that article said. And I thought, oh, that is so true. So many people, they are certain that they're all about natural building and gardening and it's like they want to get out of their worky job and they want to go live in the woods and they're going to, you know, they'll get their food through all these different things and they're going to be, it's going to be so good.
Mm-hmm.
And it is the only way to really live. And then they're out there for just not even a day and they're like, change my mind, want to go home.
Okay, so here you've had the opposite problem where you've had people come here single and then they meet somebody and then that's beautiful, so they leave because one of them's from Canada or because
fucking Canadian.
Yeah, one of them has land.
One of them inherits land or had land all along, but they were here to kind of like, I don't know what to do with my land. And so they come here with the idea that they'll just be here for a few months to kind of get an idea of, is this what they really want to do?
Yeah.
So, no, I think we get...
I don't think this place has caused any divorces.
I don't think so. Oh, no, wait.
Stephen was married when he got here.
No, I do know, I do know of one couple that came here... and they ended up breaking up while they were here, and it did kind of like, do you really want to live in community when somebody in the community is breaking up? I mean, it is not pretty.
Yeah.
And
it turns into group therapy.
Oh,
and all of a sudden, you know, no, that's not what I'm here for.
So it's only happened once that I can remember, but it had nothing to do with what we're doing. Apparently, she developed an eye for a different fella that was here.
Oh. So, again, it was with the couples forming. You've had more couples forming here than breaking up.
I think that is true.
Yeah.
I mean, I kind of feel like if your values are like the values that we have here, how else are you going to find somebody that has similar values?
Mm-hmm.
So, yeah, there's been a lot of that. I mean, but there's been people, too, where it's like they arrive here and within a day or two they realize, no.
Yeah.
And it's like, that's cool. But I think a big part of what the boot camp is all about is helping people who are in that set.
Mm-hmm.
Like, they want to be somebody mm-hmm. that grows their own food.
Right.
And, can do natural building and all of the things. They want to be that person. And I kind of feel like the boot camp is perfect for that person.
Yes.
Because the pace of the boot camp is easy.
It
is not a brutal pace. But I do got to say that when somebody's been here 4 months, they're getting like, I don't know, 6 times more stuff done in a week than in their first week. And it's not because anybody's cracking a whip or anything like that. It's just because their own pace is improved, and going any slower than that would just be too boring. Whereas it wasn't too boring in the beginning. But now they're like, no, I'm going to get more done. I'm going to... And by the time that they've been here a couple of years, yeah, they can build their own place. They can grow their own garden. And they are that person that they wanted to be.
Yeah.
Yeah. And there's a process of, acculturation, right?
Is that a word? Did you say
acculturation?
Acculturation.
Yeah, like acclimatization.
I'll allow it.
Okay. We'll go to the judges.
You made it up. That's cool. That's even better.
But, you go up an altitude, right? You get to a place, and your body has to adjust to lower oxygen levels, right?
Right.
When you change settings, cultural settings, right? Yeah. And the rules here, the expectations here are different. And they're not necessarily written down, right?
Right.
Some things are, but some things aren't. But it takes a while to find your way. And thus, it is appropriate that it is called boot camp, because it is not unlike Army boot camp. Although, don't worry, people, it's not that bad.
No. I think that the word boot camp is to keep certain people away.
Okay, it may do that, but the point of it is that it is an introduction to the values here at Wheaton Labs and more largely of permaculture. And I find, in this last week, I still sort of struggle with some of this myself, because I, off in my other more conventional life, hey man, I like screws and I like wood glue and and I like plywood, right? And so coming out here and trying to do projects requires thinking about things differently, and that change in thinking itself takes time.
Mm-hmm. And you've brought up glue a couple of times.
Yeah, I like glue.
And we have glue. I don't know if you found it yet.
No.
We have glue, but what I do is I say, let's see if we could do it without the glue first.
Yeah.
Can we find a way to do it? Because basically there's ways. There's ways to do it so that you either use less glue or no glue. And it's like, can we explore that a little bit? Just take a moment. And it might slow the project down to have to think about this a little
yeah.
bit.
Yeah.
But I'm saying, can we achieve all that we're achieving with less than 1% of the glue of what you're used to?
Maybe. I'm still adjusting on some projects in my head for that one.
Yeah.
And it's not a question of, there's a right way to do it and there's everything else is the wrong way. It's there are alternatives, and starting to see the possibility of alternatives and how they chain together. So, it does, so those first weeks when a boot is here, they're still trying to figure out, you know, where their food is, you know?
No.
And, you know, and maybe some of them haven't been good at, you know, sleep discipline and, oh, I got to be having breakfast by 7 and cleaned up before 8 and dressed and ready. That might be a new thing for some of the young'uns out there. But it's not a bad thing. It's not harsh discipline, but it's just a change in how those think, how you prepare yourself, how the day goes, and meeting the expectations of others around you.
I think if you're going to stay up till 2 o'clock in the morning visiting with people about permaculture, it becomes very difficult to get up at 7 a.m.
Yeah.
And that's a common problem. And people get just so excited to visit with all the other people and talk about all the things and stuff like that. And then next thing you know, it's like, oh, shit, it's 2 o'clock in the morning. I got to get up at 7 a.m. And so we do see people who are getting up at 7:55 to quickly pee and race to the morning meeting to be respectful, to be there before 8. And they'd skipped breakfast. Now they're really hungry. And then they forgot to fill up their water bottle. And they're like, you know, it's a mess. But I think in time they learned it. Yeah.
In time you adjust, definitely. But I was also going to say this. So coming here and being in the boot camp is a way to learn about this kind of lifestyle and to really learn the basics. But what I'm doing right now, which is just coming in a very luxurious way and just staying in the red cabin and playing with the rocket mass heaters, is also an option. Any of you people out there listening could set up a visit and you could come out here and stay. And it's really neat to be here in the wintertime when there's snow on the ground and building a fire is not stupid. I like that. I've done 2 different rocket mass heaters.
So I think this is like your 6th time out here. Is that about right?
Probably something like that.
Yeah. And Elliot's probably been out here 8. This might be his 8th time. Is that about right, Elliot?
Sure.
Something
around
like that.
Air, yeah.
Somewhere around in there. Okay.
7.2, but.
And you guys live in Portland, and on top of that, we're going to talk about here in a moment. We're going to talk about, and we've already talked. In fact, Julia, you've been in these podcasts multiple times.
Yeah.
And the property, you've got like a place in Portland that's like a urban house kind of a thing, but you've also got 40 acres a little ways outside of Portland, and that's usually Elliot doing the work, but for some reason Julia is the translator for the podcast. So
she likes to talk more than I do, I think, is what it comes down to.
Is that what it is? Because I think by saying that out loud, you're going to regret those words later. I've met Julia. Why did you say that? In a podcast!
Julia is more willing to talk about things that are in process or going on. I prefer to talk about things once they have results.
Ladies and gentlemen, that's what backpedaling sounds like. That is the voice of backpedaling you just heard. Oh, I think you might have saved your hide. Julia's making faces at Elliot like, the fuck? So, all right. I think a big thing about the boot camp is, I can't emphasize this enough, it's a shitty school where you're going to be doing the things that regular homesteaders do. Regular homesteaders have a garden, they repair things, I think regular homesteaders may or may not do natural building. Natural building is a big part of what we do. Okay, you're saying regular homesteaders do natural building. No.
No, he's agreeing with you.
Okay, so the part where you're shaking your head and nodding your head, the pod people cannot see that.
Well, I'm also eating lunch, and so pod people don't want to know that.
They do want to know that. They want to hear every smacky sound. They want to hear the forks on the plates. They want it because I dictate it to be so. I've prepared them that there's going to be smacky sounds and food and stuff like that. So, because when else do we get a chance to if we can't record it now, when do we record it?
This is the only time.
Yeah.
We must speak. We must speak before.
The thing,
like I said, I have one glorious day. I'm leaving tomorrow.
So I think that the big thing is that here, I want to take the people that would reject that other community. Like, I hate it here. I want to go home. I want to take those people that loved the values, but they got there and they are ashamed of themselves, and they're talking, and divorce is about to happen. Divorce is imminent. I want to take those people and transform them into the person that they want to be, and that they don't get divorced.
Oh.
Because their partner is like full of energy and go, 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 go. And we've had those people come here where they're like, this is the best. And then it's like the fact that the boot camp ends after 8 hours, they're like, oh no, I still got so much more that I want to get done. And we've had people where it's like, I mean, I'm thinking back to the Skip event this year. I saw a whole bunch of people. It's like, okay, dinner's over, and there's people out there still working on BBs for hours. And then I get up in the morning, and I'm walking down at like 6:30 in the morning, and breakfast is going to be served at 7, and I see these people that are already up. They've been up for more than an hour working on BBs.
Wow.
And they're putting in those 16-hour days. And so, but that's not everybody's wired that way. And I think that the boot camp embraces that. So on your first day, you're going to be told to take 5 many, many times. But in the meantime, people that have already been here several months, they're generally not taking 5.
Right.
Because they want to see the project get done, because they want to go on to the next project.
Right.
And so, I don't know, it's a different, no one's cracking the whip. There's no drill sergeant like, you know, hop one, hop two, hop three, chop, 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 drop and give me 50. There's none of that. There's nothing like that. Oh, wait. What? You're going to counter that?
No. I'm not going to counter that. I'm just thinking about the 3 boot commanders or high boot commanders that I know of, right?
Ooh, okay.
I mean, so Fred, Dez, and Steven.
Yeah.
And just the idea of them cracking a whip at anybody and acting as you just did is absolutely hilarious and completely out of character.
Right. They each had their own style. They each have their own style. Mm-hmm. And I don't know, upsides, downsides, insides, but no, it's all at a gentle pace, and then people start to go and do 10 times more on their own, not because anybody said go, go, go.
Right.
So, all right. But that's here. You guys wanted to talk about here a little bit, but really we've got some topics.
Oh, okay.
Right? Are we ready to go on to the topics? Is there anything more about here you guys want to talk about? You said something about...
What are the topics? Nobody tells me anything.
Okay. What does it say?
Lab update, sharing land, living in community,
okay.
Animals. Okay.
So I think it's when Dr. Julia said... We should record a podcast because it's been a while.
Yes.
And I picked a topic, which is going to be a topic we're going to have to walk around very gently.
Yeah.
But let's start with a quick reminder of the story of Andy.
Okay.
Because apparently the story of Andy is something that influences your decisions now a fair bit.
Mm-hmm.
And the story of Andy, which I wrote in the Permaculture Thorns book, but Julia insists that I did mention it in a podcast. The story of Andy, guy bought a bunch of acres, and it had a bunch of houses on it, and he loves permaculture, and he loves community, so much so that he reached out to permaculture people that would be in the community and offered them a place, come and live here. Like, I think he had enough housing for like a dozen people. And he said, come and live here. We're going to start a community. It's going to be
beautiful thing.
Glorious. And so a dozen people came, and they're all talking about, like, you know, they love gardening, they love permaculture, they love community, and all the things that they're going to do. And then the 12 that arrived, I'm going to say, didn't do anything except try to command Andy.
Right. Complain.
Well, more than complain. They did complain, but they also were like, Andy, you have to do these things. You have to do these permaculture things. You have to do these other things that are, you know, not permaculture, but I command you to do it. And they didn't do it themselves, although apparently they were fully equipped and they could, but No, they just wanted to tell Andy what to do.
Mm-hmm.
The 12 people came to me and asked me to mediate.
Oh.
And I told them, I know about the story. I know what's going on over there. And I don't think you want me to mediate because I'm very biased. I'm going to find in favor of Andy.
Right. Your you know? Team Andy.
Yeah. And it's like, so I think you don't want me as a mediator. I then shared with Andy that they came and contacted me and asked me to be a mediator. Uh-huh. And Andy decided he'd had enough. Right. So he kicked them all out. He's like, This is beautiful. It's just a bad batch. It's a fluke.
Mm.
Somehow it just...
I just got a bad batch of people.
It just went...
This first batch.
Something went wrong. Something... And I, you know, but you know what? I'm just gonna start over because it's unusual.
Mm.
It's unusual. Rare. To have a bad batch. For all those people to be that way. And maybe it was just one of them.
Right.
That caused the rest to go bad. Who knows what the story is? It's like, it's so complicated.
Mm-hmm.
I'm just done with all of them. Right. I'm not even going to keep one around or two. It was all of them.
Okay.
So then they all went. So you start it over. This time it'll be great. It also went bad, but he didn't have to do anything about it because the FBI came in. The FBI had some strong thoughts about it. So it turns out one of them did have gardening skills.
Ah.
And the FBI had some theories about what they were growing. But the FBI got them all.
Oh, no.
It wasn't like they just took a couple people. It got all of them.
Wouldn't that have been the DEA?
I don't know.
They were just federals.
Okay. When Andy told me the story, it was FBI. And so maybe there was something more going on. I have no idea. You know, but maybe it was something. Maybe there was a mistake. I have no idea. But I do know. And that's when Andy sat back and he thought about it for a long time. He left the place empty for a long time because it had so much heartache for him.
Yeah.
He had, his hopes were really high. His expectations were really high. And he was so hurt. And he felt like he was being brutally generous. Brutally generous. Mm-hmm. And his generosity, it's like no good deed goes unpunished.
Yeah.
So then, and this is the thing that you've pointed out today, the third time, he charged more than the going rate. Because before he was charging about half of the going rate. Like if you're going to rent out a room or rent out a house or whatever, it was about half.
Mm-hmm.
Because he wanted to encourage this permaculture community.
Right.
And so that didn't work. And I did it both times. And then on the third time, he charged like 10% more than the going rate. And with the extra money, he hired a guy to come in and do permaculture stuff on the property.
Mm-hmm.
Now, the people who came in, they did do a lot of permaculture stuff on the property. And more than the people who got like the sweet deal. And so the lesson is the price moat. Lesson. And so it can work well. I think even more than that, though, I want to point out that I think that the first couple of batches could have worked out.
Mm-hmm.
But it would take some kind of work to get it to work out. Work that Andy is not savvy to.
Mm-hmm.
And so, but there are ways. But basically, what those people wanted was cheap rent and a slave, and they got the cheap rent, but the slave was really shitty, and they're like, well, I won't the slave be obedient? I keep telling the slave what to do. He so sucks. And so, and Elliot's trying not to spit out what he was drinking as he was, because he's giggling while drinking. So the slave sucks. Is that I've heard your guys' story. I think what I hear the giggling that you're trying to do with a mouthful of water is, you relate to that story a little.
Yeah, I do. And just to add a slightly different angle to it, you know, and that A, be deeply, deeply suspicious of anybody who is seeking to live in community. because most of those people seeking to live in community are, to some extent, trying to avoid their own self-accountability. B, they're also looking for free group therapy.
Yeah, the therapy one.
And so... That's iffy. But then the other thing is, and I've tried this, and I, on one side, right? And the realization is, you don't build community by putting out a sign that says, "Hello, we'd like to build an intentional shared community at this place.
Come on down!"
Using these values. No. What you do is you put out a sign that says, "Hey, this is what I'm doing here. If you'd like to learn more and help out, you're welcome to come." And then people come and they rub shoulders with you and they do stuff. And then they're like, "Hey, you know, we like hanging out here. We like what's going on here. Is there any way that we could maybe be here more often, right? Or more permanently or something?" And then you like, yeah, okay. Because now they have really demonstrated the shared value component of it. And, you know, now you've created a community in a sort of a spontaneous fashion, right, as opposed to forcing it. And one of the things that, you know, we've seen in Portland is there was an intentional housing community or shared co-housing sort of thing that Julia kind of wanted to be part of when we moved there. And we didn't for a couple of reasons. But we ended up with a piece of property right next to it. And so you just kind of, you know, put a hole in the fence and go on over and say hello. And that was pretty lovely for a while.
Well, go on.
Well, they were welcoming. You know, they, like, here were people of somewhat similar values in terms of, you know, how they were doing some things there. Mm-hmm. And we had kids, and the kids could go over and play and vice versa. And that was pretty good. But then listening to the adults talk about just the sheer amount of time that they are spending in meetings that just go forever. And it's like, yeah, no, that's a giant waste of my life to be a part of that. I have no interest in sitting through such things. You know, and that's sort of the other version of community. And, you know, all of the rules and, oh my God, no thank you.
Put Paul's brain on your plot. Do you have a hunk of land but don't know where to start? Do you have a world-changing permaculture idea and you need some feedback? Do you feel like the guy in overalls may inexplicably hold the keys to all your wildest permaculture and homesteading dreams? Well, you're probably wrong. But if you want to give it a go anyway, you can hire Paul for a consultation. He will be all yours for a whole entire hour. Schedule your Paulversation today at permies.com/consult. permies.com/consult.
And so, anyway, one of the things I'm still hoping to do, you know, and we intend to move out to the property, is once out there, is then have more people come out and do things and see what I've been up to and have people go, "Oh, hey, that's cool." And maybe they want to come and help out some more, you know. Maybe they'll build an affinity for creating beaver dam analogs, you know, and want to do more of that because they're stuck in an apartment or a condo or just in town. And they're like, "I want to do something to help the planet." And it's like, well, you can come and build a beaver dam analog and that'll help my little patch of land in a little way. And then you can, you know, feel more connected. Mm-hmm. Hey, that's a version of community. And then you can hang out and Julie will make pizza for you on the weekends.
I mean, I was out there. I think the last time Julia and I recorded a podcast, I think you guys made a bunch of pizza out there because you have a rocket oven.
We have a rocket pizza oven. The world's most beautiful rocket pizza oven, I'm pretty sure.
Yeah, okay, because of the mosaic.
You love mosaic,
and you got mosaics plastered all over it.
Yeah, exactly.
Yeah, yeah.
It's in a box, and the box is covered with mosaic, which makes it very pretty. Yeah. Yeah. So you can only see the door. The only part of it you can see is the door.
The key is, near Portland, you guys have 40 acres.
Mm-hmm.
And there are two homes on the 40 acres. And I'm going to, before jumping into the stories that you guys have, and I kind of feel like we have to leave 99% of the details of the stories out.
Yeah.
But for reasons. But I got to say, most of the Otises I talk to have two homes on their property. And the story, it's like I've heard it so many times. There's the old house, the one that they were born in, and the new house, which they built with their bare hands. And they live in the new house, and the old house has been empty ever since their mom died. And it's like, but there's usually some stories. Like, I tried to rent it out, but I'm never doing that again. And it's like, and so it's been empty for 10, 12 years now. And I'd love to have somebody living in it that's great, but I don't want to go through the drama ever again if they're not. It's like I've been burned too many times and I'm just done. I'd rather it just sit empty and have some peace. But sure, I'm open to the idea of somebody living in it if they're great, but I don't know how to tell if they're, and this is kind of where
Skip
comes in. It's like if they've got PEP 2, I think that the odds are that they're going to be better. And so much, and when I, in the earlier days of trying to compose Skip, mm-hmm. and I'm writing the stuff from Mike Ayler's stories, as well as so many of the other Otises that I've heard of. You guys are not Otises,
mm-mm.
but you have your stories. And you've shared your stories with me, which right. I'm going to not share the details of. But I'll let you guys hang yourselves as much or as little as you like, which I advise you to be easy. I think overall the general idea is that I think you started with there was a couple.
Mm-hmm.
Oh, we're going to plant these gardens. We're going to have all these permaculture animals. We're going to do all of permaculture. And you guys were like, you can stay there for free because you're going to do so much cool stuff. It'll be great. We're going to be best friends. No, that didn't happen.
No,
my mistake.
No.
I'm adding something.
Yeah, that's a little flourish.
Okay.
That's a flourish.
Yeah. Oh, geez. Yeah. Where to go on that one?
How to walk gently through this field full of cow pies?
Well, there are. I think one of them is, you know, related to the story of Andy, which is, you know, let me take one step back and say it is funny how parallel our properties situation is to what you're describing with the Otises, because when we bought the house, there was the original 1910 farmhouse on the property, mm-hmm. which had then been added to with the 1968 ranch house. And then when they did that, and the chiropractor who owned the place, he got remarried to a nice Swiss woman, as best I can tell, from what was left in the house, who was younger. And she said this 1910 farmhouse will not do. And so then the 1968 house was built. And thereafter, the 1910 house had been rented out to some people who then proceeded to, you know, run cattle and do some other things on the property for a period of time.
I have to ask. I know there's at least one listener who is Swiss. So how do you know that this is a Swiss person? Like, what does a Swiss person want in a house? Like, oh, this isn't gonna do. We gotta Swissify this house.
Okay, it has nothing to do with the design of the house. It has a lot to do with assorted little clues left behind in kitchen drawers, and you know there were like travel documents, and there was actually a beautifully engineered keychain. The Swiss make the best keychains. Let me tell you.
Really?
That I found and I use, and it was about about, it was celebrating the 100th anniversary of like a funicular in Switzerland, and it's a beautiful thing. So I have my keys on it.
Okay.
Anyway.
All right.
It was from artifacts.
Artifacts.
It wasn't from design. It wasn't from the design. It was from artifacts left behind.
I thought that was being said. No, and I'm like, I don't.
It does not look like it has been transplanted from the Swiss Alps.
No, not at all.
Yeah. To the
kind of a bohemian style timber framing with steep roofs.
It is not a chalet.
A chalet. That's the word.
Not a chalet.
Okay.
It is
not
a chalet. I mean, I've never been to Switzerland, so I don't know. Like, maybe normal people live in houses that look like right out of America or something. I have no idea.
But, you know, so anyway, one of the things that I did is I realized early on that the 1910 house is just, it needs to be folded up and put into a dumpster. Yeah. It's just, that's where it needs to go. And, you know, I replaced it with a double wide. Our own little version of a Fisher-Price.
Yeah.
And I've had fantastic experience with the two tenants that we've had in there. Had a family in there, and they were fantastic. And we've totally succeeded. We did our own little version of boot camp, in a sense, which is they moved out of the city, came out there. They wanted to do this. They ran a little CSA for 1 year, and they tried making things for another year. Oh, yeah, they leaned into it. They really did. And, you know, and the husband did most of that work, and the wife kept the job, and that worked very well. And there came a time when they were like, well, we're moving further south, further out of the city. We're buying our own piece of property. And at the same time, her father, I believe, was going to sell his place. And so they were going to become a true three-generation family, you know, in one place, which is great and wonderful.
Yeah.
And when they left, it's like, well, I'm so happy for you, and I'm so sad for me. Right, because they were fantastic, and it was challenging finding people that I wanted to come in there afterwards, and it took some time. And there were a couple of people I thought were going to be it, but then, you know, somebody got a different job and moved to Hawaii, and so forth. But the folks that we have in there now are doing well.
Yeah. Yeah, I've heard good things about the folks that are in there.
Yeah.
But there was drama before.
There was drama before with the original tenants of the 1910 house, and nobody's been in there. And then the ranch house, and I hope that when we move in there we avoid this, just seems to be a magnet for drama. But that's partly because of how it was done, and it was done cheap. It was, you know, I was trying to avoid making commitments on improvements and so forth.
So we were doing the below market rent. If you are charging below market rent, you end up with more trouble.
Yeah, and the hope was that, you know, look, here's your opportunity to come out, and sure, you know, you profess that you're interested in doing these things, so here's your chance to do these things. And they would generally, there'd be some sort of a start on it, but then it would fizzle, and I'm still cleaning up all of the detritus that has been left behind, which is really, I don't know, sometimes it's not good for my blood pressure on particular days. Yeah.
So I kind of feel like there's challenges, and so often when people try to, you know, like, I'm going to buy a property and it's going to have this, you know, second house on it, and I'll just rent it out and I'll have this income. And Dr. Julia is making this face at me right now. And it's kind of like the thing is sometimes it's lovely. But there's also times when it's heartbreaking. I'm going to use the word heartbreaking, but and there's all kinds of ugliness that can go behind the word heartbreaking.
Mm-hmm.
And it's like, okay, so how do we navigate this? How do we have? And then it's like the Otis's, like, I'd rather have it be empty. It's been empty for 11 years, and I don't know of a lot of people that need a place to rent, and I'm not going to rent to them.
Yeah.
And it's like, because they seem nice until they rent from you. And then I just don't need any more of that. I'm too old for that.
Mm-hmm.
And so, and this is where it kind of like skip. In fact, let me ask you guys a question.
Mm-hmm.
Considering you guys have had some good luck.
Right.
And you've had some terrible luck.
Yeah.
And heartbreak. Heartbreak is a euphemism, really.
Mm-hmm.
On the other hand, if somebody was PEP2 certified...
Oh, this is so easy, Paul. I mean, if somebody had shown up in, you know, response to the ads, or just even, you know, via the Wheaton Labs network, and said, hey, I've been doing this PEP stuff, and I've shown, you know, this, that, and the other thing, that would have been a huge mark in their favor in terms of, you know, consideration. There, you know, now some of the stuff that one does in getting, you know, various BBs and, you know, PEP level certified and so forth is not applicable where we are. I mean, the one that always comes to mind for me is one of the PEPs is cutting down dead trees. I don't have many dead trees. I have live trees,
right.
You know, and you know, different trees, and you know, junk pole fencing probably doesn't work in my climate and so forth. But still, the fact that somebody has taken their time, taken their energy, and put it into learning this, sharpening their skills, sharpening their expectations about what they want, and demonstrating, and this is a key one, demonstrating their commitment and interest in it.
It's been proven and verified.
Right. Is just huge.
They're not just making shit up.
And this is a thing that comes up in thinking about the Otises and not renting out their second house. Hmm. Because there's a problem. You've got a house and you want, you know, say, fine, okay, somebody can live in it, but you've got a choice there. Are you just going to be a little version of Donald Trump and be a real estate magnate in that one little way, and you're going to rent out that house to people who need a place to live, and that's it? And if doing that, then you go down one particular path, and you have one particular set of expectations, one particular set of problems that you're going to encounter, etc.
Right.
Now, if you're going down the path of, gee, I would like somebody to kind of follow in my footsteps on this property and show the same level of care and interest in trying to improve the whole of the property, and that's a very, very different path, and the two cannot meet.
I think that there's, for every person who says, oh, no, I'm going to put in a garden, and I'm going to get some chickens, I think for every person who says that and does it, I think that there are 20 that will say it and don't do it.
Oh.
What do you guys, I just picked that number for reasons.
Yeah.
You guys will agree with that number?
I think this, yeah, probably 5% of people follow through. Or
less.
Yeah.
I'd say less.
Less.
Wow.
Well, it just, I mean, what we have over here, Homestead Living Magazine, right?
Yeah.
And just, you know, there's a whole industry of Instagram and YouTube videos of people selling the life, right, of homesteading. And people sitting in their little boxes in some subdivision or in, you know, an apartment, a condo, something, doing, you know, a worky job, which is not necessarily a bad thing. I mean, but, you know, that looks lovely. Because it's packaged. It is as packaged as anything coming off of, you know, Fifth Avenue, right? In terms of hitting the emotional buttons,
right,
of connection and so forth. And, of course, it all looks bright and shiny because it's edited immensely.
Oh, that's a really
right?
good
I
point.
I mean, it's really edited down. And so it looks lovely on, you know, on your phone during your lunch break, And you make, boy, I wish I could be doing that right now. Those people look so happy, you know. But the thing is, you could do the same thing with sanitation workers, you know. I'm out here. It's another beautiful day picking up the garbage. We just drive down this street. Oh, this is really nice street. I really like that house over there. And these people, they always do such a nice job of sorting out their recyclables. You know, you could do the same thing with people hauling garbage, right? If you just package it well enough. And this is a segue to our current tenants, because they were living in, you know, apartment-y things, and they realized this was not for them, and they leaned in to seeing how much they could do on their porch, on their back porch. And they started raising animals on their back porch. They have, like, rabbits on their back porch, I think. And they were growing various plants. You know, they were doing what they could instead of just thinking about it or dreaming about it. There is so much tacit knowledge that is not easily obtained. And when you go out there and you dive into this, and I have thoughts on, you know, the tacit versus explicit knowledge of farming and landowning as well, and some of it fits into the Joel Salatin kerfuffle as well, it's really, really hard to make that transition.
So I think that there's... I'm gonna take what you just said, and I'm gonna rephrase it ever so slightly. And I think that there's a huge difference between dreaming about homesteading and doing it.
Yes.
And I kind of feel like one person out of 20 will do it. And I want those other 19 people to come to the boot camp. And they'll end up doing it too, but it'll be like an easier but longer path.
Can I talk about tacit versus explicit knowledge?
If you want.
For a second. Right, so explicit is stuff that you can write down, right? You can put into a book kind of a thing.
Okay.
And tacit is stuff that is sort of understood, but not necessarily explained. And one of the things that I ran into, you know, a lot of people, I don't think you've ever said this to me, Paul, but... You know, generally speaking, it's, oh, well, you buy a new place and you're out there and you're wondering, you know, well, what time of year should I do this or that or the other thing? And you should ask your neighbors. And I think asking your neighbors is the wrong thing to do if you're a permaculturalist, because your neighbors do not understand what it is you're trying to do. And there's just this huge gap in tacit knowledge about things, and like soil health and you know, the number of neighbors and the soil and water district and everybody else is like, oh no, you need to put 9 tons of lime on your fields. 9 tons of lime per acre. 3 tons every 3 years to start. In order to bring your pHs up and, you know, do all of this stuff. And it's like, yeah, no, I'm not doing that. Right. And, you know, and then that leads down the whole alternative of, oh, well, there's soil health and the soil biology and, you know, and composting and compost teas and all of these sorts of things, which go in a very different direction. And if you ask your neighbors what to do, you're screwed, because now you're back on the same treadmill. It's a different treadmill, but it's a treadmill all the same that you might have had, you know, back in your apartment with the other job, because now you're having to lean in hard to get money to have people bring lime and other things onto your fields instead of working with nature to develop something, to develop that bounty that we want. And but that gap there of that tacit knowledge is severe, I think. And coming back to it, that is a thing that one can get in the boot camp. Right? And I talked about acculturation earlier. Acculturation is in part about tacit knowledge. And so you start to come out here and you see how the composting system works. You see how the willow banks and willow feeders work and how that goes through. And you start to see just even on the berms out here, the big garden berms, you know, how the apple trees are managed.
how they are faced, how they are supported with rocks to help heat them in the winter, you know, these sorts of things. And some of that can be in a book, but until you lean into it and really feel it, it doesn't get converted into workable knowledge.
This podcast is continued in part two.
Hi, this is Mark. There are a lot of reasons to get angry these days, but I prefer to focus on the positive things that we each can do to make this world a better place. The book Building a Better World in Your Backyard, Instead of Being Angry at Bad Guys, is a great resource for just that. Instead of throwing my arms up in frustration at governments or big corporations, there's a list of ideas that we each can tackle to affect change. Information about this book and other resources can be found at permies.com.